It is time now, ladies and gentlemen, for the legislative update with Linda Siegel. Welcome, Linda Siegel, to the Radio Cafe.
Good morning, Mayor Charlotte.
Good morning. So, let's see. What do we have in... Where are we in the legislature?
Well, we have 20 days left from this 30-day legislative session, and it's been very, 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 very busy, but not too much is happening yet, but that's not unusual.
Busy, but nothing happening.
Well, it's not quite true, because the budget process has been proceeding quite well, and we should probably talk about that.
Let's talk about the budget.
Well, what's been happening in the last week or so is the education budget, and of course, the education budget is one of the biggest parts of our total budget in the whole state.
Right.
It's about 42% of that $6.1 billion projected money that we're going to spend this year. So the process for that is that the House Education Committee and the Legislative Education Committee, they work over the interim, as does the LFC, the Legislative Finance Committee, to create budgets. So House Appropriations has their education budget called House Bill 3, and then LFC has their education budget, and then the executive has their education budget. So yesterday in House Appropriations, they kind of put them all together and have a House Bill 3, which will get rolled into House Bill 2 budget. And it's not final yet because they still have to negotiate a little more, but it looks like that we're going to be spending about $148 million new dollars on public education. And that's out of that $293 million new dollars that we have to expand services or restore services.
Where'd all those new dollars come from?
Well, they came from increased revenues, gross receipts tax, personal income tax, taxes on oil and gas. So that was our projection in December for the year, and it's held. So now we're going to spend that money for the next fiscal year, which begins July 1.
And when you've got three different groups coming together with three different budgets, what happens? How do they put them together into one?
Well, they have behind-the-scenes meetings, and they try to negotiate. Now, the group that hasn't negotiated yet too much is the executive. This proposed budget that's come out is a negotiation between the House Education Committee and the House Appropriations Committee, and now they'll be working to see what the executive is missing in that, which is quite a lot, because it's been the philosophy of those two entities to put as much money above the line. That's the lingo. And what that means is that the individual unit that public schools get reimbursed per child, if you put money above the line, that amount increases. So it's very complicated, the formula, but the base formula is around $4,200 per student. And as you put money above the line, that goes up. And that's what the school districts want. They want the flexibility. They want to get that unit dollar and then be able to spend it in the way that each district thinks is appropriate. And the governor's budget has more below the line, which means they would appropriate it out to the school district. So that's going to be the battle over the next couple of days.
Now, what about the fact that we've had a cabinet secretary of education who never was confirmed?
Well, that might happen this session. I know at the end of last session there were like a number of days of hearings and there was not a vote. I believe that Senator Lopez is planning on a vote in the Senate Rules Committee on Hannah Scandera as the Secretary of Public Education.
And if she is confirmed, she's confirmed. If she's not confirmed, what happens then?
She'll probably still be the de facto secretary. Because you don't just because...
So then what the confirmation process is meaningless?
Well, I wouldn't say it's meaningless, but if the governor still wants her to act in that position, she will. I guess that kind of makes it meaningless.
I guess so, ladies and gentlemen. So what does all this mean for actual children going to school?
Well, what it means is if this budget works, as it's developed now, it means more money to each.
I know, but for children, it's like they don't get hand dollar bills. What do they get?
Well, they get a smaller class size. They get different pro. I mean, it gives the school district the flexibility to create the programs for those students that district's kids need.
And so the question that I'm sure is hotly debated is, are the school districts, some of which haven't been all that successful, really the best people at deciding how to spend more money if they get it?
Well, it depends on your philosophy if you like the local control idea. I think it'd be great for you to have Superintendent Joel Boyd on the show so he could talk about some of their ideas in Santa Fe, because I think they've got some really progressive approaches going, and I know he'd love to talk to you.
Okay, ladies and gentlemen. So, let's see, anything else about the education budget?
I think that's it for now. We're waiting to see what's going to happen.
Healthcare.
Yes. Now, remember, this is a 30-day session. 30-day sessions are primarily for the budget, but the governor can give messages on other substantive bills. So we have quite a few healthcare bills that she's given messages on, which means they can be discussed during the session. And part of that is because we do have a healthcare provider shortage. We don't have enough primary care providers. We don't have enough of anybody, pretty much. So she has taken on trying to push some initiatives in this session by putting bills on the call. So we have several bills related to allowing nurse practitioners, well, actually encouraging nurse practitioners to come to New Mexico and get a fast license and become providers here to help deal with particularly our primary care provider shortage.
That sounds a little scary, a fast license.
Well, you still have to go through the whole process and make sure you have a clean background checked and all of that. But sometimes licensing boards aren't as quick as people would like them to be, although our Board of Nursing has been doing pretty good. But trying to attract more providers to New Mexico, funding for the University of New Mexico and New Mexico State. University of New Mexico has a medical school, so there's some bills out there to expand the number of slots in the medical school for primary care. The University of New Mexico has a nurse practitioner program and a nurse midwife program, so there's a bill for money to increase those slots, and that will be very helpful. There's a couple of tort reform bills which are quite controversial. They're probably not going to go anywhere, but those are the ones that limit liability of healthcare practitioners in malpractice lawsuits, and those aren't too popular with the trial lawyers, as you might imagine.
Well, they shouldn't be too popular with the public either, because there are some numbers of documented cases of massive incompetence, and there is a kind of conspiracy of silence among practitioners themselves not to snitch on their colleagues.
Yeah, we should have more discussion about that sometime.
Yes, ladies and gentlemen.
The nurses' union has another hospital staffing bill, which is sort of directed primarily at our local hospital. But that bill is probably not going to be germane. We don't believe the governor is going to give a message on that. There is a bill that's interesting in that it addresses some concerns that providers have when they come into a community and they sign a non-compete clause with a hospital or with a big practice, and then things don't work out. And there they are in the community, but they can't get another job for X number of years. So there is a bill in to limit that non-compete clause to just 2 years. We'll see where that goes.
If you get a job with, for example, Cursus St. Vincent's, you have to sign a non-compete clause?
Well, different places have different non-compete clauses. But if an institution or a practice invests a lot of money in you, pays for your moving expenses, this is their rationale, and they bring you to a community, and then you leave after a year, they don't want you going and getting a job with the competitor.
Oh, boy.
Yes, so That's one that's going to have interesting hearings. Another bill has to do with co-pays, because if you go to your chiropractor, say, your copay may be $40 or $50. If you go to your primary care provider, your copay is $25. Or you need rehab services from your physical therapist or your occupational therapist, your copay every time you go is $50. And that really discourages, we think it really discourages people from getting their full regime of rehab or being able to get preventative care from like a chiropractor. So there's a bill in to try to equalize those copays. Of course, the insurance companies don't like that too much.
Well, it's also true, I mean, especially in rural parts of New Mexico or among people who are low income, any copay. I mean, I was talking to somebody who worked in rural, way out in rural New Mexico, who said that a $15 copay for vaccinations was prohibitive for some people.
Oh, absolutely. I don't know of any vaccination copays. But
no, but I mean, if a charge,
yeah,
whatever.
Yeah, any kind of copay. There are some minimal copays now on Medicaid, which is the low-income program. But it does discourage people going to get care.
Okay. So we've talked about the health care bills. Do you want to talk a little bit about the whole behavioral health situation?
Yes. As you know, and I know probably most of your listeners know, there's been this uproar in...
kerfuffle.
Yes. I think that's what you called it the other day, in behavioral health services, because back in July, 15 of our behavioral health programs, which served 85% of all behavioral health clients in New Mexico, 15 of them were told by the Human Services Department that there were credible allegations of fraud and billing problems, and that they would no longer be receiving Medicaid reimbursement, and essentially shut down. Since then, two of them were reinstated, paid some back billings, some alleged overbillings, and are back in business. But the rest of them are essentially out of business, and five Arizona companies came in and took them over, hired their employees, and theoretically started serving all their clients. Anyway, all of this was done without due process. Those providers still do not know what those allegations of fraud are. They still don't know what overbillings they supposedly did. So the legislators have introduced, several legislators have introduced bills to try to create transparency before this kind of thing happens, so that a provider knows, okay, we're shutting you down, here are the things that you did, list them out, show them, prove to them that they're, or at least show them what they're being charged with. Creating that kind of transparency, creating a due process system where they have a right to see what they did and appeal to someone about this alleged transgressions. And those five bills, I think three of them are actually substantive bills and two of them are constitutional amendments, or one is a joint memorial. But they're trying to keep this issue alive and do some remedies for these providers that are still out of business.
Now, when this all happened, I mean, there was no process at all. There were no actual allegations. It was just like, you know, time's up, go home.
Well, there were allegations, but no one got to see what they were. And yes, that was it.
And so there was...
You're out of business. You're being taken over. That's it.
But there was no substance shown to anybody.
No.
Who was behind this?
Well, this was the Human Services Department, the Medicaid division.
Basically shut their own people down. Okay.
Yeah, right. So these bills don't have governor messages, as you might imagine. So maybe they'll be heard, maybe they won't. There's been no hearings on them yet. And we'll have to see.
all sounds very suspicious, ladies and gentlemen. Okay, what else? Crime bills.
Okay, crime bills. A lot of crime bills with messages from the governor. So those will be discussed. Now, here we are with only 20 days left, and I haven't seen one crime bill have a hearing yet, but they're out there, and we have things like increasing the penalties on certain sexual assaults. One interesting bill, which has been introduced before last session, was terminating the parental rights for someone who, for the child who's born from a rape. And that's seems to make sense to me, but we'll
right
see.
Now, a man who rapes a woman can then claim custody for the child?
Well, they've had some situations where things like that have happened. Then there's increasing penalties for child abuse, increasing penalties for sensitive images on the web. That's something the ACLU is a little concerned about.
Sensitive images.
You know,
how can images be sensitive? I thought people had to be sensitive.
Well, let's say that you posted on your own Facebook a sensitive image.
What is sensitive image?
You know, maybe you're in a bathing suit and you don't want everyone to see it, but somebody takes it and spreads it around. That's why the ACLU is a little concerned about it. But, I mean, if you post it on your own Facebook, you better beware, because it could go anywhere.
Yeah.
One important one...
Wait. So what are they proposing?
Somehow limiting that. That's why the ACLU is concerned.
Okay.
Then the duty to report child abuse. There was just recently an appellate court ruling which created some concern about who has the duty to report child abuse, and this is a bill that clarifies that. An interesting one related to the schools, the truancy issue, where if an older student is continually truant, that there would be the ability to take their driver's license away to discourage them from being...
Yeah, because then they'll really be able to get to school.
And some, we have our online promotion of prostitution bill. You know, trying to create some rules around that. Remember the big incident we had with our former UNM employee. Allegedly promoting prostitution online. So those are some of the exciting bills that we have in this session. We'll see if any of them go anywhere in the 20 days that we have left.
Has any bill passed yet?
The feed bill. The feed bill is always House Bill 1, and that's the bill that pays all the bills for the legislature during the 30-day time. So pays for the staff, pays for the legislative per diem. The feed bill always passes the second day.
That doesn't count. Has anything else passed?
No.
Okay. Sorry, got up a little late today. Still pre-caffeinated, ladies and gentlemen. Well, I want to thank you, Linda Siegel, for being with us with today's legislative update, and we're here for a few more weeks on Friday mornings from 8:05 to 8:30.
All right. Thank you, Mary Charlotte.
Thanks for being with us. We're going to be back in a moment. Please stay tuned to the Radio Cafe.